lightning strikes as far as 10 miles away from any rainfall. Many deaths from lightning occur ahead of the storm, so don't wait until the last minute before seeking shelter. Remember, you are in danger from lightning if you can hear thunder. Learn more about lightning safety at www.lightningsafety.noaa.gov. Lightning kills. Play it safe. This message brought to you by the Iowa High School Athletic Association and your local National Weather Service office.
Are we done? Okay. It's 6 o'clock, actually 6:01, and you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. It's time once again for another edition of the program Off the Wall. Okay, I'm going to cut the theme early because we have less time today. It's a basketball game coming up at 6:45, so we have less time to do our hour-long program. If we talk fast, we can probably fit it all in. Is Emmanuel here? Kyle over there?
Hi.
There's a lot to talk about. There's so much going on. Oh, my God. First off, I was a bit gloomy last week. I kind of... foreshadowing bad election day returns, and I was wrong. I was surprised that people actually turned out and people actually reacted, and it's everything that I was hoping for, but kind of lost my spirit after going through almost an entire year of this. Yeah, Democrats turned out in force, governorships in Virginia and in New Jersey. First transgender representative elected in what was that, North Carolina?
Yeah.
Virginia.
Was
it Virginia? I'm sorry.
I think it was Virginia.
There were so many good things that happened out of that, and I'm just thrilled that we got that shot in the arm. It's only one shot in the arm. We need many, many more, and there are so many other things that have to be reacted to and taken care of because it's just going to keep happening otherwise.
It's not hard.
No.
It's not hard, people. I mean, really, it's your democracy. This is it's how it works. You know, you get involved, you talk to your friends, and lo and behold, your community sticks up for your ideals. Yeah, and that's for us to decide, not other people in remote places.
You act locally, you know? Think globally, act locally. That's a phrase I came up with.
It's not just a cliche.
Okay, I didn't come up with it. But if Donald Trump can say he came up with the phrase fake news, I can say I came up with that phrase.
Is that supposed to be like that?
The phone? Yeah. I don't know. Somebody left it like that. I'm not going to touch it. I've learned not to touch things here. Don't touch things. That's a big sign here. Don't touch anything.
Yeah. It's a statement. We're not taking calls tonight. I'm sorry.
We can't because we have 15 minutes lobbed out of our show.
Yeah.
That's just, you know, how. But we're not going to spend our time complaining about that. That would be counterproductive.
Yes, in the name of the Hunger Games Department.
I don't know what that means.
I'm sorry. Sports, never sports saw department. The Hunger Games. Yes, they're going to see who is the strongest and who gets to live.
Well, I think we're playing Hofstra tonight. The women's basketball team is playing Hofstra in Hofstra.
Oh,
and they
wow.
may think they have an advantage in Hofstra, but they don't because, well, you'll see what's going to happen. Tune in at 6:45. Actually, 7 is when the game begins. But anyway, we're talking about acting locally and thinking globally and things like that. Okay, there is a great opportunity right now to do that, to think locally. And something I just found out about through reading Newsday last week, turns out, you know, we're I think less than half a mile away from Renaissance Technologies, and people around the world now have heard about Renaissance Technologies. They're that, how do you describe them? I don't even know what they do. If you ever see Stranger Things, there's this, like, laboratory where all the craziness happens. That's kind of what this place is.
Hawkins Laboratory.
Hawkins Laboratory, yeah, it's kind of like that.
What they are is an investment hedge.
Hedge fund.
Yeah.
I don't even know what that means.
Okay, hedging is investing against an investment. It's also like short selling. Like,
maybe I wasn't clear. I don't know what that means. I don't care. I don't want to know.
You're
what it
betting
means.
Against what everybody else is. That's hedging. Or you're
I usually do that.
You're invested in one thing, but you also hedge that investment by voting for the other team. It's like playing both sides so that you never lose. Does that make sense?
But don't we all lose?
We all lose.
All right. Well, anyway, Renaissance, they're right up the hill, literally. And it's so crazy because you have all this evil within a few miles of this place that is key in what has happened here. You have Robert Mercer, the CEO of Renaissance, and his daughter Rebecca, who are key people in the Trump administration, key people who have made this possible. You know, they're in deep with Steve Bannon and Breitbart and all of that. You have the guy that led the march in Charlottesville, who grew up here in Stony Brook in the S section, two blocks away from where I grew up. All right, you've got all this madness that's happening so close to us. Trump has visited here twice, and who knows when he'll come back again. You have to wonder, you know, do these things happen for a reason?
It is very close. I would say spitting distance, and invite anyone who's interested to test that theory. But I'm confident in that. The funny thing is, it's not enough to just sort of wait for them to die, because they procreate and they have employees. And they have firms that live on.
I don't want to give the wrong impression, because there are people at Renaissance who are good people. In fact, the main guy who founded it turns out to be somebody who actually donated to Democratic candidates, kind of like the opposite of what Robert Mercer is, who's, by the way, leaving in January as co-CEO. But he has still tarnished the name of this company, of this institution. And that is problematic, because what's happening now here at Stony Brook is that they are thinking of naming the medical school after Renaissance, because Renaissance over the years has donated lots of money. Now, Robert Mercer has not donated the lion's share of that money. Granted, I think he's only donated $150 million out of $500 million. You know, talking a lot of money here. But the problem is, he and his daughter have tarnished the name of that institution. If you think of Renaissance, you think of Trump now. And what do you think about having the Trump name on our medical school, which is basically what it would be for all time? That's something I just found out about by reading Newsday. The naming of Stony Brook University's medical school as Renaissance School of Medicine, honoring $500 million in philanthropy over more than three decades from current and former employees of investment from Renaissance Technologies, is awaiting State University of New York approval. Now, here's what happened. We have something known as the Stony Brook Council. It's made up of 10 people. 9 of them are faculty, staff, people that are appointed in one way or another, and 1 is a student representative. Well, turns out the 9 voted for this name change, and the 1 student, who was pretty woke, I think, voted against it because it's wrong, because you can't put a name of something that represents such evil on one of your main buildings. Yet these people had no problem with it, and now it's gone up to the state of New York up in Albany for approval. This could happen. This could happen soon unless somebody steps in and stops it, or unless students here wake up, find out about this for one thing, because it's being kept kind of quiet, and voice their opposition to it. Unless, you know, you guys think this is cool to have that name on a building here on our campus. I think it's very uncool. And like I said, you know, there are good people at Renaissance, but they need to salvage their name. And right now their name is in the trash. And, you know, through no fault of theirs, they let this guy run the place. And this is what happened. This is what happened, tied deeply to the Trump administration. Were it not for Renaissance, there probably would not be a President Trump right now. That is a fact.
Yeah, it's worth noting the distinction is this is a private organization. I don't think they have shareholders. It's very interesting how different corporations who do answer to a board, they still lobby, they still get involved in politics, but they do it at an arm's length, and they use a lot of other firms and outside, and they're sort of even-handed. This is what happens when you decide to get your private organization involved in political issues. Instead of distancing and using sort of traditional lobbying methods, you basically drag in the entire firm because you've no insulation. And that's basically what they're faced with now, with all the, controversy. And essentially, this name, it's basically, it's like having the hospital named Trump Hospital. I mean, as far as association goes.
It's not that much different, really isn't. And here's the thing. If you type in Renaissance Technologies into Google News, what do you get? You get what's next for Robert Mercer, Steve Bannon's money man. Steve Bannon's money man. That's the top hit for Renaissance Technologies is Steve Bannon's money man. It's just really, really bad, really wrong. While you weren't looking, Trump just appointed a tax evasion expert to head the IRS. I mean, it doesn't even have the word Renaissance in it, but yet it's affiliated with Renaissance Technologies. So this can't happen. We can't let this happen. It's just another bad idea, another step in the wrong direction, and it's something local that we do have a say about if we choose to say something. And, you know, we saw a lot of people saying something last week, last Tuesday on Election Day. Here's an example of something you can do right here, and I hope they make the right decision.
It's also funny that these are traditional methods. These are the same, you know, private entities and contributors that are lumped in and considered the swamp,
as
it were. But here they go, and whatever Renaissance or Mercer, whatever he is in agreement about, whether it's getting control of DC or whatever their special interest is. There is so much that is indefensible. The fact that they are aligned with it makes them even worse.
Mm-hmm.
Silence says more than them actually saying, no, we're only on board because we like whatever, coal, you know, you name whatever balderdash they're standing for. But they aren't saying what specifically their interest in being money men for them is, other than what we can assume is racism, sexism, and all the other conservative principles that are being upheld in these wonderful days and weeks.
All right. Well, moving on, since we don't have that much time today, I'd like to spend so much more time on all these topics, but we do have other things to discuss. I guess, you know, we should probably focus on the elephant in so many rooms these days, and that's the whole Roy Moore situation in Alabama. Now we've mentioned this guy before. This is the guy running for Senate in Alabama. You saw him dressed up in a cowboy outfit. Why is he dressed up in a cowboy outfit? There's no cowboys in Alabama, but he was dressed up like that and holding a gun in the air, and that's the person that they wanted for Senate. Then the allegations of sexual misconduct came out. You notice that's happening a lot lately. There's a lot of allegations of sexual misconduct and predatory behavior and things like that. We'll get into that in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But in this particular case, you have a guy that, he's known for putting the Ten Commandments up in front of the state courthouse and all kinds of other ill-advised moves, comments, you name it. But this really takes the cake because apparently he is accused of molesting a 14-year-old. It seems like 14 is the age of choice for so many people in power. It's really crazy. In this particular case, a woman who's now in her 50s said, yes, this happened. In fact, it's weird because she voted for Trump. You know, she is a Republican, and she's coming out and saying this. So it's really making it hard for the conspiracy people to say, this is a plot by the Democrats to throw this guy's candidacy into turmoil. Doesn't seem that way. Doesn't seem that way at all. And plus, she's not the only one. Other people are coming forth as well.
Yeah, there's a second one. I think a 16 one individual who was 16 at the time.
Plus, the guy has all kinds of history. Hanging out amongst teenage girls when he was in his 30s, maybe even beyond that. Supposedly he was kicked out of a mall because he was harassing them. And he signed yearbooks and things like that. So, you know, there's more than just one person say so.
Yeah, he was, I believe, in his 30s at the time. And there's a lot of, I think, muddying from the perspective of Moore that this is somehow a tradition in where he's from. And that somehow he had parental consent to pursue or otherwise interact with these young people, which in most cases, yeah, that's a good idea if you're running an after-school program or a daycare or other field trip.
Hold on, he's a district attorney. That's what I don't understand. He was a district attorney in Alabama. There's all kinds of positions and interests that, necessitate you hanging out with younger people, but being a district attorney doesn't seem to be one of those.
Yeah, that's not like one of those where, you know, working closely with young people is sort of goes hand in hand with the job position.
Unless you want to scare the crap out of them by saying, I'm the district attorney, and anything I say is going to be taken as gospel, much like the Ten Commandments I put in front of the courthouse.
He did kind of threaten this young person with that, though, and she's actually been saying that. That's one of the clips that's been played over and over again this week, was essentially that he was wielding his power and that no one would believe her, which is sort of a classic threat. If you tell, I'm going to hurt your family, that kind of thing. So there's a lot of angles to this, and it has sort of larger implications, but also very specific implications, which I think will open up a little bit.
Here's the thing: the election is coming up in December, I believe. We're actually going to be in Alabama because part of our travels over the next couple of weeks will take us through that state. In fact, we won't be here next week live. We'll be here through some recorded device. And so, listeners, please tell us if there's something you want us to do in Alabama while all this controversy and crazy. Unless he drops out of the race by then.
He's doubled down already. The only way he's going to drop out is if it's click, click, go the cuffs or something, you know?
Well, that would be interesting, wouldn't it? But even then, this is what's weird about this. The voters, the Republican voters seem to be doubling down and saying, well, you know what, we have to forgive him if it is true. Anything but the Democrat, anything but Doug Jones, who's the Democratic candidate. This is the guy who, when we were in Birmingham, we drove to the church where the four girls died in the fire.
Yes.
Terrorist act in Birmingham. It's most, I don't want to say amazing, that's the wrong word. It's just very moving to be there and to see where this horrible act took place back in the 60s, where basically, there's no question about it, it was a terrorist act.
The incendiary device in a church.
Yeah, and four young girls were killed. In fact, there's a movie called Four Young Girls that that documents it. And they got away with this for so long, but Doug Jones, the Democratic candidate, prosecuted two of them. Fairly recently, because that's how long they eluded any kind of responsibility. And this guy is seen as worse than someone who is suspected of being a child molester. Think about that. Think about I would vote for a Republican over a child molester if the child molester were a Democrat. Hell, even if he was in the Green Party. I would still vote for a Republican over that if I believe that to be true. And it seems like there's a lot of evidence to suggest that, yeah, there's some truth to this. There's definitely a lot of corroborating. Always have trouble with that word. Evidence from people who don't know each other a particular time frame. Well, you have to ask a question. You know, there's something here. And the fact that the defenses that I've seen so far have compared him to the father of Jesus. I'm not kidding. Basically, Joseph and Mary. That's Jesus' parents' name, right? Joseph and Mary?
No, it's Mary and Joseph.
What do you mean it's Mary and Joseph?
Get technical.
Okay, fine. Anyway, they're saying, yeah, Mary was a teenager and Joseph was in his 30s. Like, really? You're comparing yourself to the father of Jesus? Okay, fine. You want to go that route?
Yeah, I got a lot of really messed up relationships in my fantasy world I could throw out there as an example. Let me tell you about some mystical storybook thing, and then I'll compare what I do in real life to
Kyle,
it and see how that goes.
We're talking about Jesus.
Oh,
let's
Jesus!
Not make it about you. It's about Jesus.
No, I've heard a lot about him. Believe
All
me,
right.
I'm confirmed.
Well, maybe
and
you need to hear this.
Yeah.
Okay, supposedly it's an immaculate conception. First of all, okay, so Joseph and Mary didn't even have sex to produce.
You mean he didn't? The meat.
I just figured out Christianity. Oh my God, Joseph didn't want to be condemned by his culture for having sex with a teenager, so he lied about it. And so I don't know where this baby came from. It must be a miracle. And Jesus.
So this is like a baby daddy story?
Could that be it? Could that be
like
at the root of everything?
Christ is the original whoa.
Oh, I'm not going to say that, but oh my God. I mean, if we want to go with this, if we want to go and say that Roy Moore is the father of Jesus, and let's go back a couple of thousand years,
mm-hmm.
and he's saying, I didn't do this, and
I think
let's say
there.
One of the 14-year-olds somehow got pregnant, it wasn't me. And they didn't have DNA tests back then,
no,
right? So,
no.
I'm probably offending so many people right now.
You know, I just wanted to point out one thing. I honestly, what else has Roy Moore got going on? Like, this is his life. So, of course, he's clinging to it. Of course, he's doubling down, and he's just going to continue to be upfront. You know, a lot of younger, I'm going to say this is ageist, but maybe not younger. Okay, I don't need to be ageist even to say this. I'd go there. But a lot of other successful individuals
mm-hmm.
at all ages,
mm-hmm.
they've, you know, reached that success because they have a variety of interests in their life. And they're able to take something like this and say, you know what, this is messy. Maybe it's time for me not to be a public figure anymore because it's any longer because basically I went doo-doo in the bed kind of thing. You know, you kind of...
doo-doo in the bed. Okay.
You ruined your platform. Maybe you should start a little, like, fruit stand or something, you know? But he has nothing else going on and won't go away.
Well, I guess he's got nothing else going on now. It's all or nothing for him. But seriously, how does he get past this? I don't think there's any way because all the Republicans are coming out against him now. Finally, it took long enough. Republican candidates, that is, Republican senators. There's talk that they won't even seat him in the Senate if he does get elected. But what does it say about the people in Alabama that will not admit any wrongdoing here on his behalf and will continue to vote for him, anything but a Democrat? There's a sickness there. There is something really wrong when you can't look beyond your political beliefs and say, yeah, you know, the other person is better this time. We're just so divisive right now, and it's really kind of frightening.
We've recognized this, though. We've recognized this about conservative politics, the Republicans in particular, just how loyal and how much they stick with one another, even in the face of stuff like this, which isn't entirely cut and dry because a lot of people are distancing themselves.
Do you think it's unique to Republicans, though? I mean, I think, it can happen on all sides if you're very divisive.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think in a lot of different groups, there's constant sort of... but the degree to which it goes on, I think, is far less in that organization. And
well,
we're seeing it now that only certain individuals who can will distance themselves. Others will just sort of go along and hope that it sort of disappears or fizzles out.
Let's look at the parallels because... Roy Moore is not the only case. We've seen so many cases in the last couple of weeks, a lot in Hollywood. You know, we've seen Kevin Spacey be completely...
blacklisted.
Blacklisted, yeah. I mean, basically House of Cards is done.
86.
And Louis C.K. There are more than I can even list here. They're coming out of the woodwork, and it's good that it is coming out of the woodwork because people finally are stepping forward, having the guts to confront people who have done them tremendous injustices. And, you know, it's something that I think is in every single industry, every single social group. But the point here is that a lot of these people are, if you want to look at the politics, are on the left. And the left is not defending them. They're not defending Kevin Spacey. They're not defending any of the other Hollywood people that have been accused or found or even admitted to doing these things. So I think there comes a point where, you know, you have to say, this is somebody I believed in, but clearly it's no longer somebody I want to believe in because of things I've become aware of. And we have to all be able to do that, regardless of how much. I mean, I loved Bill Cosby for a large part of my life. And then I found out about all the accusations. And obviously it's very... it's very hard to believe that all these people conspired to come up with all these accusations against this guy out of thin air. So, you know, to me, even if the guy is not in prison, he's guilty. He's basically, so many people have come forward with similar stories without working together to come up with those stories. So you have to weigh all that. You have to basically decide for yourself, is this still somebody that you can support? And or look up to, and many times you'll be disappointed. Because icons constantly let you down. They really do. And when they don't let you down, we want to tear them down. And sometimes that results in unfairness. I was talking to you about this earlier, and I said there's one case I can think of over the years that I think was not treated fairly, and that's the case. And I know a lot of people will disagree with this, but that's the case of Michael Jackson, because I think Michael Jackson never really hurt anybody. I think he was just weird and kind of, you know, put a lot of people off. But I think he genuinely cared about the people that were around him. And, yes, there were a lot of young people around him. But I don't think he actually and this is based on you know, what I've seen in court transcripts and the way other people have said things either for or against his case. It just seemed like he was an oddball.
Yeah.
And an easy target for people that didn't understand where he was coming from.
Compared to the sort of accusation or what, in retrospect, was sort of levied at him, or I would say that he did a lot more good for the world than from what bad, I guess, can be gleaned from those accusations and so on. Although it's... Yeah.
Well, so many people spoke out.
Looking back, it doesn't compare to this kind of stuff.
Some of you who were kids, they spoke out, you know, supporting him, saying he was a positive influence.
Yeah.
You have to look at that because, yeah, people can lie. They can come up with all kinds of stories. That is certainly possible. I mean, hell, when I was in school, we all tried. I guess the statute of limitations over on this. We all tried to get Mr. Zukowski fired, who was a math teacher.
Uh-huh.
By just accusing him of certain things. But, you know, it didn't hold up because, a bunch of kids, somebody's going to crack, and it just never really went anywhere. But there was, you know, discussion of it. Kids can be very calculating and cold, but, you know, you have to really make enemies of them for that to happen in the first place. You have to wonder why that is.
You have to be smarter than them?
You got to realize these are kids, and they're intelligent.
You have to be an adult?
Uh-huh. And that's, you know, I believe in treating kids as adults intellectually, you know, having great conversations, but you never forget they're kids.
Yes.
You never forget they're vulnerable. You never forget that you're in a position of power, authority, all kinds of things. You know, society looks at you in a different way, and you can never abuse that. You can never abuse that particular position because it's an honor to be in that position in the first place. And this is what so many people don't get. They seem to miss it. And I just wonder, does our society emphasize that? Does it say that, you can treat kids like second-class citizens, they can't do anything about it, and eventually the more evil amongst us really take advantage of them and leave them traumatized for most of their lives?
Yeah. I would say, like, it's, you know, parents are too jaded to care. People who are caretakers aren't paid enough to care. You know, and you know, then we create little adults that are themselves abusers and terrible people. But I think that there's a lot of there's a gift in that. And I think when you don't have young people in your life as much, you tend to take those opportunities, as you said, as more of a gift and an honor, like you said, to do right by them. And I think it's also, you know, like one thing I think of is they're little recorders. They're recording everything. They're sponges.
Sometimes literally.
Yeah, they're soaking up every little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think when you're in a position and you are then sort of taking advantage or abusing younger people, you're very, very selfish and short-sighted. You're not looking at the sort of adult they'll become as a result of you taking advantage. And in many ways, it is much healthier, and is always healthier, I think, to be a consistent presence of good over that long term. So when they're adults, they're like, yeah, you were a good person in my life. Because you know what? I had crazy things in my life. I had a lot of good people and a lot of good. And I also fault society a little bit because I think that, you know, and I'm not going to have too much pity for some of the abusers, but it's disappointing at the least to have people who basically are closeted their whole lives. And imagine there are 10 times as many people out there who are essentially closeted in public, and that they spend their entire lives in the closet and then are outed over this. It's a waste. It's pathetic. It's disappointing. It's really tragic. But I think as much as 99.99% of that is the responsibility of the adults taking advantage of the gift that is being an influence, I think society sort of has a role in repressing that in a lot of ways. You add to that sort of jaded and apathetic adults who are interacting with kids. You create circumstances where abuse is happening, is able to happen, especially when adults who take advantage of that are the only ones that are interested and the only ones that are given that gift, that opportunity. So we need more trustworthy and good adults out
there. You know, as far as being jaded, that is something that I'm concerned about because, you know, in this society, we're very reactive to the threats that are out there. And we tend to overstate them many times. Not that this is something that should be minimized in any way, but when you extend it to be suspicious of anyone who is not in your immediate family or anyone who is not completely 100% known to you and treat everyone else as a hostile force, you're helping to create a society that isn't a whole lot of fun to live in. And that is not healthy for people growing up. We've seen the reaction to this on many levels, not just as far as bringing up kids, as far as, you know, walking down the street. Well, does this person have a gun? Do I have to have a gun too? Because this person's going to shoot me. For, you know, it's basically a very unhealthy way to live, where you just assume everyone is out to get you. And we should never foster that kind of society. And I see this happening with all these revelations that are coming out. Oh, my God, this person took advantage of that person. Just it never seems to end. And it makes you realize that there are so many untold stories out there. But the other thing we forget is that there are a lot of good people out there. And, you know, it's easy to make jokes about Catholic priests. But, you know, not being religious myself, I can say that most Catholic priests are not child molesters. Most of them are good people. And unfortunately, they have a big hill to climb because of the people who have abused their position, and they are seen as somebody to be suspicious of. And that shouldn't be our default reaction. Same thing with teachers. Same thing with scout leaders. I mean, you know, we've seen it ourselves in the hacker community because we spend a lot of time with younger people as well. And, you know, for those who are older and jaded, why do you want to hang out with young people? There's only one reason you could possibly do that. Kind of a parallel to what people say about hacking. Why would you want to know this? There's only one reason you'd want to know that, to commit fraud. It's a horrible way to live. It's a very unhealthy way to live. And it's not good for people growing up. It's not good for people who are already grown up. You know, it's something we need to take a good long look at and realize that we can do better.
And those groups are already separated by design in a lot of ways. There's ageism, of course, and then also just the discouragement of intergenerational learning. You know, you have sort of distinct family units, but also there's, you know, many things to be learned from
people across generations. Older people can learn from younger people and vice versa. So the context is important, but there's no shortage of baked-in stuff to keep that kind of learning away from sort of common norms. I mean, there's a lot to separate people. So it is a bit, I guess, less counter to share and to teach people. And then we find that in technology, there's a lot. I mean, especially with technology, because younger people are using things that older people don't even know about. And that's, and of course, with what we do, it's a kind of that early age where young people just start getting into computers. So we see it a lot. It's very common. There's other industries too. This, it kind of reminds me of a guy who retired as a bike mechanic. And one of the things in his sort of letter to all the customers he hated was that, you know, something, I'll paraphrase, but something about, you know, being accused of, you know, going for kid butt every time you're teaching a child to ride a bike. Because no, this is true. When you're showing a child how to ride a bike, you grab the back of the seat and get them going on the two wheels. And as a bike mechanic who would run a shop for years, this was a constant thing. And parents would say, why are you grabbing my... No, I'm making sure your child doesn't fall over. Do you want me to help your child learn to ride a bike? Or do you want something that looks like something to not look that way, and then your child doesn't actually get to learn to ride a bike?
Maybe a brochure is in order saying, this is exactly what I will have to do to get your child not to fall.
I'm touching the seat of the bicycle, not the seat of the child.
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's a lot of crazy people out there that would take advantage. There's no question about that. But if you go around assuming that everyone is up to nefarious purposes, it's a very bad place to go. And how's your kid going to evolve into an adult with this constant fear and suspicion? You know, by all means, listen to you. Whenever anybody makes any kind of accusation, I think this should be the cardinal rule. You listen. You listen to, if they're 5 or if they're 55, you listen to them. All right? And there should never be an exception to that. It takes a lot of guts to come forward and accuse somebody, even if you don't have direct contact with them. It takes guts, and you have to acknowledge that. Now, if the facts don't support their case, that will come out. That will come out in time. But you never push them away and say, you don't count. You know, how dare you stand up to this person? You know, I think once, that's why you're seeing so many people come out right now, because they realize, hey, it's okay for me to say something. I can actually do this now because other people are saying something, and I won't be completely shut down. I won't have my life destroyed for daring to stand up. And people have carried this for decades without being able to say a word. Think about that before you assume that they're making it up. Again, you know, if they're making it up, the facts will bear that out at some point. But to actually come forward, that is something that we all have to acknowledge takes a tremendous amount of courage and strength. But, you know, I also... It goes beyond just predatory behavior on this level. You know, kids grow up being tortured in all kinds of different ways. And sometimes that is like a super authoritarian type of upbringing where, you know, when I was growing up, kids were afraid of their dad coming home. They feared it because, you know, he'd find out how they misbehaved and they would get the corporal punishment because that was all the rage back then. And you should not ever grow up in a household where you're afraid, and you should always feel safe there. And there are so many kids, even to this day, that don't have that. We take it for granted, and we're both lucky enough to come from households where, you know, we didn't live in fear.
I got spanked. I got swatted a couple times.
I got slapped. I never got spanked. Spanking wasn't in my household, but occasional slaps.
Yeah.
Once when I was down at the train tracks in Jamaica, Queens, late at night, well, not late at night, like 6 o'clock, and I came home, my mother was holding a belt out the window of the apartment building.
Oh, snap.
I never got hit with a belt, but there was a threat. Like,
how about bar of soap?
I don't know why I would go in the house after seeing that, but I did.
Wow.
But that was the extent of it, you know. It was never – but I realize so many kids don't have that, and
right,
that's something that we need to focus on. Every kid has the right to be able to express themselves, to be able to be who they are, and to not live in fear and not live in unhealthy environments, i.e. smoke-filled houses and things like that. There are so many different levels, and it's just, I guess if nothing else, what good has come out of this whole Roy Moore thing is that people are talking about it more, to make a pun. It's something we need to address, and the fact that it's coming out in so many different arenas, so many different places, that tells me that this is everywhere, and we need to address that issue. And you know what? We are already out of time. Boy, that went fast. We could easily take calls and talk about this. Maybe in weeks ahead, as I'm sure more people get accused and fall from grace, we'll have more opportunity to speak about this.
Yeah, and it's a really difficult issue, I think, and it's sensitive, and there's a lot of aspects, and everyone has different history and experiences in upbringing, so it's not something we're going to be able to cover in a show or even a bridge show, but it's certainly something that is out there right now. And as a society, we're listening. This is something we're supporting. People who've been hurt, we're supporting their story and making sure they're able to seek justice and heal. And I think this should be a moment and a way for us as a society to forge ahead and, yes, have more healthy and precocious young people as well as healthy, well-adjusted adults.
Absolutely. You can write to us, otw@2600.com, with your thoughts and feelings on anything we've discussed. You know, it's interesting. I was playing random music the other day, and it's incredible. This song just came up, and I'd never heard this song before. It's from Terry Hall and Fun Boy 3. Terry Hall used to be in the Specials. And this actually is the last song on the last Fun Boy 3 album. And it's a song where basically he reveals to the world that he was abused as a kid on a school trip to Paris. And he had never told anybody about this. He used his art to just basically out the whole thing. And, you know, we all have the power to do that, to express ourselves in one way or another. There are outlets. We all have outlets, and this was the outlet he chose, and it really was very powerful. And I want to thank iTunes for for randomly picking this song that woke me up, and this will be our outro today. Again, we won't be here next week live. We'll be here from somewhere on tape, and we'll be passing through Alabama at some point. So please write to us, otw@2600, with your suggestions on what we can do. Stay tuned for basketball. Good night.
what was going on inside your head. I would have said, but I was blind to your devious mind. There's no excuse for child abuse and the scars that it leaves. Where do you draw the line on school trips to France?